Hi, good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to the U.S. Institute of Peace. I'm Victoria McComb. I manage the program here on media and conflict. It's a new initiative that we just started last year, looking at the role of media throughout the conflict cycles, both as mitigator and instigator. Today's program is on hip-hop and conflict, titled Can Hip-Hop Beat Conflict? And what we're going to be hearing from our four panelists are their own personal experiences in conflict zones. We have three artists here today, two from conflict zones who are currently using hip-hop as a transformational art and for bridging the divided communities in those conflict zones. And we have Professor Dr. Summers from Tufts University, who will be talking about his research in Sierra Leone. I'd like to briefly introduce them because the biographies have already been handed out. Abir, Sabrina DeWitch, is her MC name. She is known as Palestine's First Lady of R&B. She's a nationally and internationally known artist. She's featured in the documentary Slingshot Hip Hop, which is about the life of young Palestinian artists who started the hip hop scene in Palestine. It's also an official selection at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We have Carl Kokai Walker. Carl is a multifaceted artist and producer. He served as a cultural envoy to China, Mongolia, and Russia, and several countries in the Middle East as part of the Rhythm Roads program. He has facilitated workshops on jazz and vocal improvisation as it relates to hip hop at several universities in the United States and abroad, and also serves as faculty with a school of improvisational music in New York. We have Dr. Mark Summers, who, as I mentioned, is an associate research professor at Tufts University at the Fletcher School. He began researching the situation and perspectives of war-affected youth 19 years ago, and he's currently carrying out research and writing on the role of popular culture on the lives of youth during Sierra Leone Civil War. One focus of his work is examining how rebel forces use the work of Tupac Shakur to prepare child and youth soldiers to fight. And finally, we have Silas Babaluku. Silas is the president of the Babaluku Foundation and is also an artist, musician, and performer. The Babaluku Foundation works to connect youth with music and arts to transform their lives and unify diverse communities through educational programs that nurture and empower a new generation of young leaders in Uganda and all of Africa. So we'd like to start, please, with Dr. Mark Summers, and then we will hear from Abir and Silas, and finally from Carl. And throughout the presentation, we'll be showing some video footage of from both Abir and from Silas for their work in Palestine and Uganda. Dr. Summers, could you please?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, if you want to try to feel old, try being on a panel with a bunch of super cool rappers. There comes the Professor Fuddy Duddy to hit things off, you know, no video. I have an 18-year-old and he loves rap. And, you know, he's been intrigued by this, all this stuff about, you know, dad likes Tupac kind of thing. You know, what's all that about? And one time when I was describing the research, I said, hit them up instead of hit them up. And then that really opened the floodgates for
my father. Tupac Shakur is talking about hit them up and keep your head up and
so on. So, as they say in some parts of East Africa, I'm going to try to be up to date on full-time business, but I don't think I'm going to survive. Anyway, let me give it a shot. So, can hip-hop beat conflict? Well, we're going to hear, I think, many ways that it can. And I think the preponderance of information and experience is really leading us in the direction to think that that is the case, but not entirely. Can it also inspire conflict? Yes, as well. Although, again, this is definitely the lesser of the two impacts. And some of the stuff I'm going to be talking about is actually, some of it is pretty disturbing how hip-hop has been used, but we'll get to that. So what I'm going to try to do is put some context on the attraction and use of hip-hop among African youth and others. and draw from field research in Sierra Leone and with Sierra Leonean refugees. But first, just four quick stories. One of the things about hip-hop music in Africa is that it's very youth-specific in general. Adults don't like it quite often, particularly in a place where there's been a war. After sort of Tupac's popularity has waned, and more recently the popularity was for 50 Cent, who also has waned. But in a few years ago, well, 2005, I was trying to buy a 50 Cent T-shirt in Buchanan in Liberia, and the woman, when she saw that it was, you know, a white guy wanting to buy a 50 Cent T-shirt, now here's somebody that, you know, is selling things in the market, she refused to sell me a T-shirt. She was really offended that I would be interested after all that had gone on during the war there. Another example is at the end of interviews with youth, well, actually with most people that I interview, I usually end an interview saying, if there's time, do you have any questions for me? And sometimes male ex-combatants and other male youth ask, yeah, I have a question. Is Tupac dead or is he alive? And see, I have this idea. I think he's still alive because he still has CDs coming out. So we have discussions about that. And then something about the origins of the research. Of this research started in 2000. I was doing research with Sierra Leonean refugees in Gambia. And I arrived one late afternoon. I met with four or five refugees. And we arranged to meet the next morning to have an interview. 100 people came, 100 refugees came to speak, and one of the things we talked about is, how did you get here? And they started talking about something called Operation No Living Thing, which was the second attack by rebels into Freetown in during the Sierra Leonean Civil War in January 1909, which was unusually ferocious, even for a civil war that well-renowned for atrocity. And they talked about, in some parts of the city, rebels came in vehicles, and painted on the side of the vehicles were phrases like death row, hit 'em up, only God can judge, and the most famous saying was, all eyes on me. Some of the rebels were dressed in Tupac T-shirts, and they have dollar signs. They used to be all over Sub-Saharan Africa. They have dollar signs on the collar, and they're black, and it has Tupac on the cover and on the front, and then the bottom it says, all eyes on me. The fourth story is, after the war in Sierra Leone, I was talking to urban youth in Freetown in the capital, and was talking about music. And, you know, who were they listening to? Who was giving them ideas? There was a lot of talk about local musicians, but then Tupac came up again, but different songs. So one of the most important ones for adjustment after war was also Tupac, and the one that came up the most was Keep Your Head Up. So what's going on here with this? Now, to think about this, just a little bit of background, and I'm going to speak primarily about the Africa situation. But actually, this applies to all of the developing world. In fact, all of us. We're living in the age of youth. Right now, this is the youngest population of human beings in history. And this is true in terms of the numbers of youth, which is 1.5 billion, more or less. 85-86% of those youth live in the developing world. That would have been so it's hard to get a picture of this in a place like the United States, where actually the population is getting older. But as in Africa, in other parts of the world, the opposite is very, very much the case. But it's also true, the population today is also younger in terms of proportion of the population that is young. It's never been this young before. So you have, for example, Rwanda, Liberia, Sierra Leone, 70% of the population or more is under the age of 30. And that's increasingly common. The other place where populations are exceedingly young as a region is the Middle East. So it's basically from Afghanistan to South Africa. These are on a very young human population. This is something that is new and unusual. A lot of sort of actually people thinking about this in this town have taken a security perspective of this and seen that this as a threat to stability and to democracy and to progress. And I think that in many cases, what happens is that youth are hugely misunderstood, and that there are stereotypes filling the place, filling the gaps for where actual information is. Here's an irony about this youth issue and why these kinds of stereotypes can sprout. They're the demographically dominant population in Africa, but yet most of them view themselves as an outcast minority. So this is particularly the case in urban Africa. And with this in mind, African youth, just by being there, directly challenge ideas like mainstream. Well, if you have so many people thinking that they're not in the mainstream, then actually the mainstream is very narrow. Representation, or another one would be civil society. Who, in fact, does civil society represent, particularly among the youth population? Usually not many people. Youth leaders are often university educated, and quite often male, and most of the time they don't represent. It would be actually very hard to do to represent the views of the youth majority in their countries. A couple of mysteries about this that sort of also surfaces. It makes no sense when you understand really how poor and excluded most African youth and their lives are, why they're so peaceful. Now, this really counters the stereotype that particularly male youth in Africa and in the Middle East, I would say, are inherently violent people, biologically violent, some people claim. A second sort of mystery is, why are so many African youth in cities? Now, because it doesn't, to an economist, for example, there have been economists that have written about this, it doesn't make any sense. You know, the jobs or the livelihoods are in the rural areas where there's good farmland. What are all these young people doing there? And yet they're there. Well, one of the pull factors, people that pulling youth to the cities, like youth all over the world, is that they're interested in connecting to global culture, particularly to youth culture, and rap music, hip-hop has a lot to do with this. And the city is the place where you can become a member and contributor to it, and we're seeing examples of this all over, and other panelists will tell you a lot more about this. So, which brings us to popular culture, including hip-hop culture in Africa. I mean, the antecedent really is reggae, I think, in the 1980s, and the most famous musician on the continent, certainly non-African musician, was probably Bob Marley. And one of the most famous phrases that that people knew and thought of really resonated, and there were lines like, "Them belly full, but we hungry." Well, now this speaks of hunger and inequality, and these were things that that resonated with lots and lots of people in Africa. So Marley was a voice of resistance, and you had a lot, actually still, you can see the knit caps, particularly in the 80s and 90s, the knit caps that Rastas would wear over their dreads that had the colors of the flag of the African National Congress. In the 1990s, the influence there was mainly ideological. Well, something happened with Tupac and with other rappers in the 90s. Rap was much more the voice of rebellion and open defiance than just resistance. And it seemed to inspire action more than just ideology. And it was distinctively youth-led. It was also led in Africa by an extraordinary artist, that is Tupac Shakur, and to a lesser extent Biggie Smalls. But Tupac really had an enormous impact, not just here, but also on youth all over the world, on very much so in sub-Saharan Africa. So why is that? Well, some themes in the music that radiated. The ideas of being heard and seen and understood on the singer's terms. I mean, this is drawn from interviews with youth in many different war-affected countries in Africa. Being trapped. He sings eloquently about being fearless. One of the things that really has captivated people who were ex-combatants, who were fighters, is that Tupac regularly made reference to the fact that he was going to die. And that comes up a lot. This being fearless and knowing you're going to die and being stuck, being trapped. And yet being so evocative of other issues, of other ideas. There was so much to him. It was really a fascination to a lot of youth, and that continues. And then for some, there were other issues. Being rich, some youth would make reference to the fact, the interest in being a millionaire nigger, like Tupac, being a thug nigger, like Tupac, even having a style with baggy clothes and the turn up, wearing that as a Tupac trademark. So some of the rappers were young, rebellious, stylish, fearless, new, brash, and black, which was an identification as well. There was a clear understanding of understanding, using Tupac as an optic for understanding what it meant to be black in America. One of the things that's very interesting, and I don't think that this is would just be the fact in Africa among youth, but my impression is that many youth edit out the misogyny and rage in a lot of American rap. The core themes that seem to come out have to do with being seen. There's a lot of description of people's lives, a lot of talk about corruption and injustice. So you have this being heard, being understood, and what the world looks like from the perspective of a young person who really, up until they became rappers, might have been seen as being more or less invisible or very junior. So the research in Sierra Leone. This is work that I'm doing. This is have had some field work. I'm hoping to do some more field work this fall. As I said, Tupac and other rappers were used for peace building, are used by youth to think about adjustment in the post-war Sierra Leone. But Tupac was also used in an extreme way as a voice of violent rebellion. Now, there was a great attraction of Tupac during the war and before the war for youth. And what appears to have happened is that rebel leaders exploited Tupac's massive appeal with youth to incite abducted youth that were their soldiers to carry out extreme atrocities, what they would call using Tupac tactics. One commander put Tupac's influence on his troops this way, which, by the way, 80%, it's estimated, of the soldiers of the Revolutionary United Front, the main rebel group, 80%, they weren't just children, they were unusually young. The estimate was 80% of these child soldiers between the ages of 7 and 14. So what was so appealing? This is what one commander said. Tupac had no fear, he was a real killer. So Tupac's influence is, again, not just in Sierra Leone. Many of the African youth who rioted in Paris 2 or 3 years ago were wearing Tupac t-shirts. Just as rebel youth, some rebel youth, Sierra Leone wore Tupac t-shirts as a military uniform. And in fact, early in the war, if you were found wearing one, if the rebels saw you, they either would demand the t-shirt or kill you. So where does this leave you? Well, in thinking about this, I mean, rap music, and I'm talking with reference to my understanding and reading about particularly about Tupac, it originates with the black American underclass. Tupac was, in my view, and in the view of many others, obviously, is a major artist and a thoroughly brilliant one. And, you know, I think if he wasn't, then his worldwide appeal probably wouldn't happen. But he is, he was really an extraordinary, extraordinary artist. And one of the things about rap for in talking with African youth is you didn't have to be a great instrumental musician, but you had to have something to say. And these ideas and the format really radiated powerfully, and it came from people who also felt alienated, and it spoke to people who were alienated on this on the African continent, who, with regards to Africa, were also black, and that is something that would come up in interviews as well. But again, this is a global phenomenon, and there are rappers all over the world, including, I should point out, American soldiers are writing rap songs in Iraq to help them process and deal with the trauma of being a soldier in the middle of battle. There's a lot of rap going on, and some of these interviews, they're writing them in the tanks, and soon afterwards to help them process their feelings. So rap as a format is exceptionally accessible to young people from many different backgrounds. I think one point is that alienated people don't necessarily have comforting stories to tell. Some are angry or stuck. Some of the descriptions can be brutal. But again, most of it is fearlessly honest, and some of it, a lot of it, is quite poetic. And then there's an expression of alienation and this need to be seen, and describing life again from being a young person in difficult situations. So the music can be used for many purposes, including inclusion and peace building. But again, it's almost always on youth-defined terms, not on the terms of the mainstream or civil society. And of course, the music sounds great, as we all know. Which brings us to a final question. In places such as Africa, where there are so many alienated, marginalized young people, how could rap not take off? All eyes on me, indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Summers. We'd like to hear from Abir next, but before she steps to the podium, we're going to play a brief clip, about 5 minutes, of a trailer for the documentary film that she's featured in called Slingshot Hip Hop.
أول مرة أمسك مايك وأول مرة أغنيك
يوم أنا طول عمري نقدر الناس والناس تشوفنا وتعرف إحنا مين
راح نسافر دلوقتي إن شاء الله
أنا مش مصدق حالي أنا طالع مطرح وماسك المايك وبغني
أنا سعيد جدا وفي نفس الوقت خايف جدا جدا نقطة الخوف مش راح تروح خالص
عضو أول في فرقة بي آر الراب العربي أول فرقة راب عربي في مدينة غزة
بدي أنا هون وبدي أطلع برا بدي أفر الناس لبرا إنه في بنات عربيات بغنوا راب
اخترعوا على التقرير احنا بالبهدي هوا كتير اسمع حكياتي بلاش تعصير
وقتها عالم بلاش تأثير
راح كارثة هون تشير مش راح اتعب ولا ازيح راح اطلع عن الجيح احكي بقلبي
كان اول شوي صعب لانه بنات عربيات مسلمات كمان يعني كان شوي صعب عن قدامنا عن عقبالنا يتقبلوا هذا الاشي بس احنا ما خلاش هذا الاشي يوقف قدامنا
حتى لو اشي وقف قدامنا راح نكمل يعني مش راح نهتم لحدا
بدي احكي انه اوصل رسالتي للعالم كله هذا اللي بدي اياه انه ما اشتغلش على الفاضي
انا بتلاقي هون عندنا عرب عرب اسرائيل جوا فلسطينيين بهم اسرائيل مستنين ايش احنا.
واحد اثنين واحد اثنين واحد ثلاثة جال عنك وانا هون مع اخواتي بعرفكوا حالي انا هو ذاتي محمود.
ايش ايش الضغط عم بيصير معنا كشعب كلياتنا
هالايامات لما بكون ماشي بالشارع بيجي لي هالعدو فتح لي صدره فارق داري السارع. بطلب الهوية بيطلع على القومية وبشوف عربية بتفقى معه عصبية.
Because I'm speaking Arabic.
Yeah. هي عن عنصرية صهيونية ضد العربية.
احنا بمخيم عيدم ورايحين نشوف الجدار الفاصل العنصري.
حس صغير صغير بمعنى مش بمعنى انه الجدار طويل وانا بمعنى صغير للقوة اللي بتدعم هذا الاشي للعالم اللي ساكن على هذا الاشي.
وهون يعني كسرين كل اشي ولا اشي بخلينا زي العالم. اول اشي كان هون برضه شجر زيتون عينينه ولا هدول اللي هون برضه بدهم يخلعوهم كلهم عشان يوصلوا للجزار اللي غاد عشان يسكروا كل اللحم.
سور بالعالم وقع او هذا السور رح يوقع.
يعني زي ما بصير بال 67 برضه بصير بال 48 بيبنوا حيط وبيبنوها على ارضنا وباخذوا يعني بيصادروا اراضي من اراضينا. يعني حيط حاطينها عشان ما نتوسعش، صخور حاطينهم عشان ما نتوسعش. هاي سياسه اسرائيليه، سياسه صهيونيه.
اعرفكم انا بس انا من بلد اسم هلت فيها اللي بوت ما بدفع الثمن وفيها اللي بهدلل الناس اللي عملوا غلط
وبسعوا انه الناس اللي بتفكر انه عرب الداخل فلسطينيه الداخل اللي عايشين ب تحت سياسة صهيونية ديمقراطية شافعة على الكل يعني فبيقدر يشوف انه الحكي لا يعني احنا
كل منطقة هنا كل منطقة هنا الهد يعني وصاروا هادمين يمكن 66 65 بيت هم باللد
عانوا المكتبة وحطوا محطة شرطة جوة المدرسة.
كل حارة عربية هي بأسوأ وضع هنا يعني مبينة زي مخيم لاجئين داخل البلاد نفسها. أو هيك we are the black people of the يعني the middle east.
الموسيقى متعب كل اللي بدنا نعمله هو نوصل رسالة فإن حرية لازم نطلبها هو الأشياء اللي كانت ناقصانا كإحنا كناس كل الفن كل الرسم.
رسالتنا يمكن إحنا جينا نقدم رسالة معينة بس وصلت رسالة غير إنه في أمل في شعلة شمعة صغيرة بمغارة تأمل تزبط.
احلف المايك الموجود بايدي احلف اكون جندي حقيقي
بحلف انه العدل هو سبيلي
بحلف انه ما انسى تاريخي
وانا باسم الرب مقدمي تحت ارضي خطوط ايجابي سلبي والنتيجه نور الرب العربي.
Hello, my name is Abir. I'm featured on in Slingshot Hip Hop. The movie looks totally different today. The director, Jackie Saloum, who is a Palestinian-American based in New York, did not have any budgets or any funds, so she said it's going to be out in 2002, then 2004, then 2010. It was out this year, and we were at Sundance in this January. So. I was born in Lid too, the mixed city that you just saw. It's mixed with Jews and Arabs. A lot of cities in Israel, whether have a majority of the Israelis, and some villages have a majority of Arabs. And then again, there is the West Bank and there is Gaza Strip. I don't know what's the background that you have about the Palestinian-Israeli issue, but I'm here to talk about the Palestinian hip-hop among this conflict. We were introduced to hip hop in 1998 by Tamer and Dam, who I had the honor to work with. They are my best friends, and one of them is my cousin. They started in so this year we're celebrating 10 years for this revolutionary movement. We were actually introduced to hip hop by Tupac. He is literally our god. No matter if people can say that he's a killer or not, he would still be our God. The other day I was walking in New York and wearing a t-shirt of the world-known revolutionary Che Guevara, and a woman stopped me in the subway and told me, "Excuse me, where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Palestine." She said, "I'm from Argentina, and you're wearing a t-shirt of a killer." So I guess in the world, some people who might be called revolutionary for fighting for a right, some others might consider them criminals for doing some actions that had to lead to it. I don't know. I'm not here to defend Tupac or Che Guevara. I'm just saying hip-hop is a revolution, and I'm very honored to be part of it. Through Tupac, we got to hear of Martin Luther King. Through hip-hop, we got to hear about Malcolm X. I heard about Tupac before I heard about them. I don't know if it makes sense, but that's how I knew about them, because Tupac used to tell me about them. Tupac used to tell me about the streets in America, the streets that in TV looked very beautiful. Beautiful flowers, beautiful white people, great malls, great schools. Tupac came and told me, "Oh no, there are ghettos that you don't know of. Drugs, killing, gangsters, this is not Tupac, this is the system, this is the government." Tupac just talked about it. He may be dressed like one of the gangsters or whatever, but the gangsters are a result of the system and not hip-hop. Hip-hop is coming to talk to you about it. If you don't want to see it, you're going to say that hip-hop is violent. You want to avoid it. In Palestine, it's not really different. It's actually the same. We took Tupac's songs and replaced each black word with Palestinian, because we were the black for the Israelis, as Tupac was the black for the Americans. In 2000, the second intifada started in Israel. In this intifada, unlike the intifada that happened in 1982, Arabs inside of Israel took action too, and 13 of them were shot and killed, in addition to hundreds that were killed in the West Bank and Gaza, but nobody hears about these people. The numbers keep on growing up, but no one talks about it. We're trying to figure out how to let the world hear what the Israelis are doing in Palestine. The wall you just saw inspired us to write more and more to get to the world. With hip-hop, we were able to reach out to the world. When I came to the States for the first time, people asked me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Palestine." They asked me if that's Pakistan. "Where is Palestine?" Funny, you pay taxes to come and fight us, and you pay taxes to have tanks where I live, but you have no idea where I am. You can't even point my country on the map. Why? Because today it's called Israel. Israel, who's being supported by the Americans, by each one of us, for paying taxes and for supporting the Americans and supporting the Israelis. We as Palestinians inside of Israel don't have much rights. It just look like it. Just like the minorities here in America, they look cool. The bling on the MTV make us feel like, whoa, hip-hoppers are rich, man. They're not. It's not the real thing. The bling is not hip-hop. It's just a new industry. It's just a new mainstream that is trying to distract people. Palestinian hip-hop is growing. It's very young. It's only 10 years old, but it's growing every day. With Slingshot Hip-Hop, we were able to get to America. I was able to perform publicly. What we write about is violent. We were told many times that we're violent. I was told that I'm, as a Palestinian, I represent violence. Violent. Why? I mean, you tell me. Imagine your life without water, without electricity, having tanks going around every day, from morning till dawn, depending on when the Israelis want to pass you. Me not being able to go to the West Bank. I'm a Palestinian, but I can't go through to the West Bank. It's like living in New York and not being able to go from Brooklyn to Queens. It's just like that. It's that small. I'm not allowed to go to the West Bank. I've never seen Gaza. You tell me how I cannot be called violent when I talk about it. Violence is coming from you, from the government, from the people who are standing on the checkpoint. If I'm supposed to just walk around and be like, "Please let me pass," I don't know if I'm going to have any impact. I don't believe hip-hop is violent. I believe that the people who are trying to avoid it and avoid what it contains and what it's trying to tell us just want to call it violent so people will stop hearing it. Indeed, there are many bad impacts of it too. A lot of people take good things and try to deliver them badly. It is not hip-hop in general. In Palestine, we love hip-hop so much. I never knew I was Palestinian till I heard the word hip-hop. I always thought I was Israeli. But for some reason, I spoke Arabic and not Hebrew. For some reason, I was Muslim and not Jew. I had no idea I was Palestinian. I had no idea what occupation is. Hip-hop taught me who I am. The hip-hop told me you are different. Not only that, you could actually be a free person, and you do not need the Israelis to give you the permission to pass from a city to a city. With hip-hop, we reached to a point to know that we are able to fight for our rights. Bob Marley talked about it, Tupac talked about it, we took it from them. We embraced the American black American culture and took it into our lives. With hip-hop, we were able to meet people in Gaza. Through the movie Slingshot Hip-Hop, I got to see the rappers living in Gaza. If it wasn't for that, I would never be able to see them. I'm not allowed to go in Gaza. They're not allowed in or out. They've never seen any other city but Gaza. With hip-hop, I got to write different lyrics. It's not easy to be a hip-hopper, actually. It's not just wearing baggies and wearing the bling. Actually, you have to know how to write. You have to be very talented. You have to rhyme and flow. Believe me, if you don't flow, you're going to be kicked out of the and kicked off the stage. It's not so easy, sir. It's really hard. We're being dissed every day to get better and better. It is, again. A lot of people come up and pretend to be and claim to be hip-hoppers, but they're not singing anything about their shoes or their hats or their clothes. I cannot sing about my shoes or my hat or the money I have. One, because we don't have money in Palestine. Two, we don't have time to deal with it. People are being killed every day, and we have to talk about it. Unless we get used to killing, that we don't talk about it. Hip-hop is not supposed to be solving conflicts or stopping violence or whatever it is people are expecting it to do. But it's bringing a lot of awareness. Before hip-hop, kids in Palestine and in Lid, the city I live in, had no idea what they are, and they thought that their destiny is to be drug dealers. That's who they're supposed to be because they're Arabs. We started a house club who had kids coming every day just to rap and freestyle. From that point, they wanted to know history because we asked them to rhyme about history, rhyme about World War I, rhyme about the occupation, rhyme about 48, rhyme about blacks in America, rhyme about Africa. They started learning history. They had no idea we're teaching them what they're actually being taught in school. It's just hip-hop told them that it's cool. Through hip-hop, you could do many, many things if you do it in the right way. I think the audience that listened to the Palestinian hip-hop does include adults in Palestine. They all love it because we're describing their struggle. They're the one that had to travel walking from a city to a city and became refugee. Not we. We just came into a beautiful world. We're describing their pain and describing their struggle. So adults like it too. There are a lot of people against it. It's not easy in everything. You have to have people who love you, and you have to have, in what we hip-hoppers say, haters. That's part of the game. We got used to it. We're learning how to deal with it. We were told many times that if you're being criticized, meaning you're doing something good. We in Palestine hoping that people would know about the Palestinian issue and would stop supporting the Israeli occupation and the Israeli huge wall. It is frightening. I can't breathe when I'm next to it. Through hip-hop, we're trying to get to people to know in America that what their taxes are going for. What are you paying? You're paying for wars. And we're hoping that through hip-hop, you'll get to know that and you'll understand that and see Palestinians a bit other than the terrorists who bombed the Israeli bus. It's not only about that. You should hear both sides. The movie Slingshot Hip Hop is now being screened all over the States. You could look for it at slingshothiphop.com. You see everything about it. It's a very important movie, not because now we're recognized as artists and, wow, it's cool to be famous, but actually it's bringing a lot of awareness to the American people and to embrace us, and I'm learning a lot about America. When I was young, I loved America. I just wanted to be American. Everything about America got me loving it. I started talking English at the age of 3 just because I wanted to go to America. I came to America and I was disappointed. people are not as happy as I thought. When I was a teenager, everybody told me America are just the people who want to conquer and occupy everywhere. They want to be, you know, in charge of all the world. I came here and I was disappointed again. It's the government and not the people. The people can't even pay their bills. That's what I've learned about America. I am very happy to be a part of the hip-hop revolution movement. I'm very happy to be called dark or black. I'm very proud to be a person who's associated with someone like Tupac. And I am part of the Palestinian hip-hop, hoping that you will get to know it as much as I do. Thank you.
Thank you, Abir. Next, we're going to hear from Silas, and before he comes to the podium, we're going to show a short video about his foundation in Uganda.
That night, Silas requested from our host to be introduced to musicians who lived in the region. Being a major figure in the community, Experito, our host, was able to run an ad on the radio to reach the young musicians in the region to have them show up for 9 a.m. at his house the next morning. Around 10 youth showed up that morning and we were quick to make friends with the group. For many of them, it was their first chance to meet each other also. Silas sat with the group for a good time, talking about the importance of representing their culture and using their own language to carry their messages to the people. A major moment I remember was when Silas was asked how any one of them could make it on the international platform if they didn't use English in their songs. They didn't even know that it was their own language which would be unique to the international music scene and their culture which no other artist could copy. It was a moment that forever changed their views on their own potential as African artists and would be the foundation of the movements to come. After a long time of coming to understand their stories about their land and their struggles, they decided it would be good to write a collaborative Acholi hip-hop song which would address these issues and represent the Acholi people and Gulu to bring about positive change in their community. The song was aptly named Let's Open Our Eyes. And the group formulated themselves to become the Remnant Voice.
This is Andre Genbach. I want to thank Babuluka, Babaluko, that is keeping it real. Silas's policy. I just want to thank God so much for what Silas did. I begin to appreciate because this man came from nowhere and met us in this deserted place, because Gulu as a town or as a district was deserted, or northern Uganda was deserted as a place. But Silas came unknowingly. He just pulled us from down pit. And we went to the studio never expecting that it might happen, but by surprise we saw a savior coming from a certain hands where we even don't know, we don't even feel it off, but the man just came and took us to the studio. We never pulled our sense. I'm speaking to you people outside there. This man came, they took us to the studio. We never pulled a sense of our money, because you can see we're young people, we don't work, we don't do something that can make us maybe hunt something to live, to get money. We never pull something. But by the grace of God, God brought Silas into our ways. And the man took us to the studio and we recorded. Not only that, after recording the song, we went on doing our video. Because we never even feel that maybe one day we shall appear in our maybe internet or the WBSO international television. But by Silas took us into another level. So I'm speaking to you people outside there, if we could have someone like Silas, or people like Silas, some to do it, five people could save us like no one. So we pray you people outside there that if you can be, or you take the hearts of Silas, it will be good, and really it will take most of us, because all of us, we lose hope of life because of what was happening. But Silas came as a reviver and it took us onto another level. Just want to say thank you.
Of course, you know, this is our part. You know, we're playing out here in Gulu, representing positive music, hip hop, you know, from my heart. But, you know, bringing back the culture to the people. We just finished doing our thing, you know, representing it, keeping it real. Luga Flow Flavor in the building. Now I got my Acholi people spitting it in the Acholi. You know, we had a little conference of empowering them and telling them, you know, you need to represent your culture and bring it back to the people. So, you know, this was the outcome, you know. 2 days of, you know, coming up with the concept, getting into the studio and making a music video. You know, that's what we call guerrilla shooting out here, you know what I mean? Culture, the happiness, the hope, the future. That's what we hold right here, man. Gulu, man, all the way. What do you think, you know, putting out positive music? Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to say I'm really privileged to be here today. While I was just watching our clip, I remembered the way the journey started, and I almost cried over there in my chair, because just to be here today and be able to share a story that I work for passionately every day,
it kind of affirms my life and my passion of things that I want to represent to the people. And so I'll definitely speak from the heart as I'm a young black African youth that I was privileged to grow up in North America, and I know what it is to share the privileges of North America. And 2005, just a little background story of me. I was struggling. I could have been one of them, you know, juvie kids in prison right now. I was struggling with life, and just listening to hip-hop, you know, it called me out every day to look at my roots, look at originality, look at the power in within. So doing that, voice started coming to me. It's like, I mean, you've tried all you could do out here. I mean, your mom brought you out here. You've went to school, and things are not working out. And what do you do now? Do you continue to just frustrate and try to achieve things that are not making you happy? And a voice led me to start getting up. And I'll tell you the moment that I woke up, because I remember I was sitting in my mom's living room, and I was watching World Vision. And I wanted to sponsor a kid from back home, because I'm like, unless I could send, you know, $20 a month, you know. And through resting and sponsoring a child or try to adopt one, I was like, but hold on, I'm from Uganda. You know, this is the land where, you know, I proudly should see myself doing more than just sponsoring a kid. So I ventured out in a journey that led me to start hearing a voice that tells me, go back to Africa, see what's really happening with the people, and take the message around the world and share it and bring this truth, you know, whenever the platform is given. I was sharing with her today that, I mean, it's good for me to be out here to speak, but my pride is when these kids talk to you, you know, because then it's not me telling you anything. I'm not here to push any sort of philosophy, mindsets. I'm here to represent the truth of what young people are saying today. And when she was talking over there, you know, to see a sister from Palestine, you know, sharing the same struggles of this kid that I was working with in northern Uganda, to me, that's mind-boggling, you know, because, I mean, we're not in separation on that level. See, we're finding out hip-hop is uniting us. And so it goes to be a global connection to all the young people all over the world, you know. And I'm part of those young people that is taking the spinner today to just let you know that if you're in this building and you know that you're here today to just listen and hear and do your research, my quest to you is that act if you can act. And this is not a figure issue that, you know, we ought to start raising monies and you know, in order for this change to come. This starts from the heart. If you're passionate about something and, you know, it could contribute to this kid's lives or to the kids in your neighborhood or anywhere, do good for that neighborhood. You know, that's my message. The other thing, I'm going to talk about Bavubukov Foundation. Bavubukov Foundation is a foundation that I decided to start after my first trip to Africa. I hadn't been home in about 11 years prior to that. And when I got back to Uganda, I didn't have a budget with me, but God knows I sent a lot of young people. And funny thing, you know, statistics has it like right now we're like 54-55%, you know, of the whole population in Uganda is young people. And I used to work, when I first went on my first journey, I worked with the young people in the city. So I really didn't know about northern Uganda, or I didn't really know about the other villages that I've been able to go into right now. And going to northern Uganda really brought that reality to life, because I was walking around the refugee camps, the internally displaced camps, they want to call them, you know, and seeing young kids from the ages of 2 years old. Let me take you to the bracket of 26. Let me keep it right there before I get into the older bracket. Literally waking up every day. I mean, they have nothing to sleep on. They live in huts. And when they wake up, they got nothing to do but maybe to go sit in a classroom to sit up. I mean, you guys hear about schools that are being built in these regions. I urge you, if you have the opportunity to assess and travel to these regions and show me where the impact is, because my heart is coming from where the impact. I grew up in North America. I've seen people fundraise. I've seen people raise monies. I know people got heart. People are giving. But how come whatever is being given is not showing any sort of fruit on the ground level? And to me, that's my point of contact to taking this panel. Yesterday we had a conference with brothers from Nairobi, another group, you know, of young people that are mobilizing themselves through hip-hop to deal with the situation that's going on in Nairobi. and they had the same question. It's like, it's not that people are not helping us. We know that help is coming. You know, we've seen videos of people, you know, in North America, in Europe, you know, rallying and taking their energy to support us. But, you know, we just never see anything on the ground. So what do we do on this level? You know, these are all questions that are coming up. And our movement, like I said, is for the truth. And that's what we represent. So I figured if I was to take this panel to share with you people what's happening, I want to keep it in the now frame, you know, because we need to do it now. And if we're going to take it for these kids, I mean, if we're going to help out, we need to do that now, not in the future. And so for that reason, I wanted to tackle the part of like hip-hop, where hip-hop talks about education. You know, she mentioned she got educated to find out herself. And if you don't know yourself, then education is not worth to you. I mean, you could carry the PhDs and the, you know, and all certifications that you have. But if you don't understand yourself, that's a problematic issue to have. And so hip-hop, what it's done, it has given us the avenue to start being able to educate young people on a humanity level, whereby if you're not getting discipline at home and you're hanging around with your hip-hop peers, you're actually getting a share a lot more than sometimes school could give you. And the other thing, we've also learned that education is good, you know, but it has to be doing for us in order to be educated. So we're learning now that we need to start, and this is what a lot of young people are saying, is that, you know, I want to learn what my passion is so that at the end of the day, you know, I feel well accomplished and I'm a happy person. You know, and these are the theories that we're pushing through hip-hop, and we're seeing them manifesting. I mean, we got two evidence and proof here. My sister from Palestine, and I'm from Uganda. And I mean, maybe some of us don't have those PhDs, but we've put ourselves in lines to be able to represent this truth. And now what do? We reach out to people, you know, like people in this congregation that have went to school for years. I mean, if you've done 9 or 10 years of school, man, what are you doing with that knowledge? I mean, that's a whole lot of knowledge to sit on. And, you know, they say knowledge is power. And so I think it's time to activate the power part instead of just sitting on the knowledge. You got to finish the whole context. If knowledge is power, you know, you need to let the power come into fruition. And so for me, as, you know, a person, a hip-hop puritan, I feel like, you know, we stand here and we share our struggles, we share our stories, but these stories all reflect and within humanity. And that's why hip-hop has become a big phenomenon all over the world, because, I mean, we say hip-hop is a label, it's a youth culture, you know, but it's just, you know, another way of us defining, you know, humanity and being able to find resources on how to, you know, mobilize ourselves to actually start fixing all the issues that, you know, like my sister was saying, the system has put us in these conditions where we have to find a resolution for ourselves. If we don't and keep waiting, nothing is happening anytime soon. Because, see, those policies take forever. And, you know, during the process, people are dying. People are going with hunger. And, you know, people are struggling. And we would not sit and wait for a policy to be implemented while we see our brothers suffering. And for that note, I feel like, you know, my mission... I feel like what I've discovered and what I'm doing is like I put a call out, you know, for people to start acting. You know, I could take up a spin and speak for days, because when I speak with truth and I speak, you know, with a vision of understanding that we're all capable of doing something and without an age limit. You know, I mean, some people realize it when they're like in their retirement ages that they could do something. And that's something we're trying to serve the young people of the Western world to get into, because no, you could be going to school right now and doing something positive. And I'll talk about another issue. Another issue is that I know there's a lot of research people here today, you know, and I've met a few friends. The reason I've just started my journey to Africa. That's why I'm choosing to go off and share with you guys. I've met a lot of students during my journey. You know, some of them are way certified more than me, who has my diploma in, you know, sound engineering and music, you know. And when I met them in Africa, I was like, well, what are you here doing? And, you know, bluntly, they kind of, we're here to do a research and, you know, assess what's going on. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do with our research? It's like, oh, I'm going to submit it for my paper.
I'm like, you mean you came all over to Africa just so you could get a grant, and, you know, go and get your PhD and that's it? I feel like in the scholar, you know, institutes, you need to start promoting researchers that are actually eradicating these issues. Like, send classes to Africa where they're not just going to do a research. No, I mean, they'll come out, understand what's happening, but also be a part of implementing structures. I'm saying implementing structures because all the young people around Africa, I'm representing them right now, and I'm given an opportunity. I'll let you know what they need. They need spaces they own. Spaces where they feel they won't be evacuated, where they feel secure to come and exercise and acquire knowledge on any level. Every young person in Africa relates with music because we're a musical continent. So me as a hip-hopper, they see me as like, yo, you out there? You better tell these people this is what's happening. You know, I know kids that are ITT, like they really want to do computers. I know kids that want to be doctors. I know kids that want to drive planes. You know, but through music. And they see me on the stage, they come up to me and whisper these things. What do I do? I mean, I'm not certified in those fields to help them in any form. But I'm given an opportunity to get a platform. And that platform leads me to put a call out to people. I mean, whatever field it is, it could help. We're not limited. We're not a limited people. We're not limited with resources. And we're not limited with potential to actually activate ourselves and do something about it. Now, once again, we keep saying the word system. You know, this system, the systematic way of thinking has put us in place that, well, I mean, plan for 5 years from now and follow the steps, and maybe you might get exactly what you want. But it's never the truth, you see. It's good to be in order. It's good to, you know, follow up on everything you're doing on a regular basis. But it's also good to keep your mindset in action at every moment that you're moving forward. Because action leaves back, you know, a trail of truth and proof to everything you're achieving. And that's why I was talking about the researchers. I mean, I know I have enough friends that have been to Africa. Some of them want to go back, but they're like, hey, my program is over. And, you know, but they did see what was going on out there. You know, some of them have traveled all these war-torn regions, and they could tell you stories even more than I know. You know? But I'm like, well, I mean, you're back in North America. This is a pool of resources. It's a pool where people are channeling monies into education systems and structures where you could go back to that region and do something beyond. And so I'm calling out on all the researchers and scholars that are in here to, you know, start going with the mindset of Africa that's going to actually contribute to where you're going rather than you gaining more than the people are. You know, I mean, why, you know, should you highly put up, you know, your certificate up on your wall and knowing that you got what you wanted, but those people are still in need? You know, and for that reason, you know, the Vovokov Foundation, the whole thing we have is that we want people who truthfully believe in themselves and have a passion. It doesn't matter what you do, and, you know, to connect with us. And we'll lead you into Uganda, not only into Uganda. Now we have international brothers. I know people in Brazil. I know people, you know, in Palestine. I know people in Germany. I know people in Pasadena. I know to connect these links where we could all stop being a part of this new formation of what's going on. And you know, the way the scholars will help us is that now they know the language. And they could put us on a table with people that are capable to help. And so we'd like people to focus more on those issues. I mean, that's been my word, and I'm glad to take this platform for all my African youth, and God bless you.
Thank you very much, Silas. Our next speaker is Carl Walker, Kokai.
First, I'd like to say thank you for everyone for having us here. Thank you definitely to the panelists that have spoken, because for sure the sentiments that they have expressed are definitely going to be echoed up here by myself. The title is Hip Hop versus Conflict. I first have to give a history of hip hop, because the original conflict zone where hip hop was born out of was the South Bronx. That was the zone of conflict. In these times that I love history helps me, because what history does. It helps for me to be able to reflect back on something so that I never forget what is going on at any given time. And I can go back and reflect and say, you know what? Our school systems are starting to lack now. Well, that was the same thing that was happening in the 80s. People are in economic crunches right now. Well, we saw gas crunches before. But maybe not during our generations, but those things have always existed. And there was music of the youth. I grew up in the hip-hop movement. That was our music. That was our solace. That was our safe place to go and where we can express our issues. When in 2005, my group Over Soccer Band was chosen by the Kennedy Center and ultimately the State Department to send us out and to go to the Middle East. When we first got the call, they asked us, what countries do you want to go to? And we said, well, you know, we can go back to France or we can go to England. And they said, no, we need you to go to an area of conflict, an area where a hip-hop message would best benefit giving a newer face to the United States of America. So we went through and picked Muslim countries that were over 50% population was Muslim. So we had places as far away as Mauritius, and we had Palestine, and we had Jordan, and we got a list of countries to go to, including Saudi Arabia. So our five countries were Bahrain, Jordan, Palestine, we did go to Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. And in those places, we were supposed to go and share with the people. That was the point of the program. And the program is called The Rhythm Roads. And this program is taken off of the old Jazz Ambassadors program that existed for many years when Dizzy Gillespie went to Cuba to go and share with Cuban musicians during a time of conflict. When we first heard this call, the first thing that we thought, being the sarcastic black Americans that we can be, was, that's right, the senators can't do it. The politicians can't do it. That's right, send in hip-hop. We know. We know, send in hip-hop. Because that's the voice of the youth. That's the voice of struggle and pain. And we need to go and give people a real definition of what real hip-hop artists living a real life are about. When we first started doing our workshops, I mean, I've traveled, thank God, since 1995. I've been all over the world. I've been to France, in the south of France, in Marseille, when the hip-hop movement was just starting, meeting the cast from NTM, the cast you saw in La Haine, the movie, the Algerian youth. I studied with Algerian tabla players. I studied with Cuban musicians in Matanzas and in Havana. I've gone to the favelas of Brazil and talked to the cast there, and it's the same story. We got pain. And we got struggle. We have pain and we have struggle. And this is the easiest way because it doesn't cost a lot. You give me a surface to bang on and my heart, and I can express this message that I need to get out, because if I don't get it out, it's going to drive me crazy. And 9 out of 10 of the youth, when you show up and when you start talking, that's what they're talking about, the pain and the struggle of what's going on, because they need their message to be heard. So I definitely applaud the State Department for thinking about hip-hop and sending it elsewhere so we can get a better reflection of what's really going on in our country. When I went to Palestine, because I went to the University of Bethlehem University, and we passed through the gates, and we went through the wall, and we performed. We hopped in, it was early, it was mad early, and we drove down from Amman, Jordan, and we went across the Allenby Bridge, and we got harassed at the checkpoint because we were meeting the consulate, the U.S. consulate. And you have the embassy, which is in Tel Aviv, and you have the consulate, which is in East Jerusalem. And if you're with the consulate, you're with the Palestinians. And so the border guards there were saying, you know, what are you doing? And we're like, we're here, you know, we got to meet our person from the consulate. And the consulate representative, she came, and she said, well, you know, we have to go in. And they were like, and so you're going to Palestine first? And we were like, yeah, you know, this is part of the program, blah, blah, blah. And we were like, okay, you know, start grabbing your bags and transfer them to van. And they were like, nah, stop. We want to search everything. We got to go through everything. And she declared diplomatic immunity on the thing, and we got through. That's right. We went to Bethlehem University. We rode past the border guards. They checked the whole van. We get to the university. It's 8 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock. They just had elections for the school elections for the university. coming from the United States, I have to give the caveat. Coming from the United States, when I first heard I'm going to the Middle East, this is my first chance to go to the Middle East to see what's really going on. You think, just like anybody else, oh, we're going to Palestine, dog? We're going to Palestine. And on our schedule was Nazareth, Bethlehem, and then they had Ramallah. And so we said, Ramallah for real? We're going to Ramallah for real? But we claim this thing of hip-hop. We say it's worldwide. We say it's universal. And so we stand up and we say for ourselves, this was us, because it was four black dudes from D.C. going to Palestine to go represent hip-hop. So we were saying, you know, for ourselves, this is our opportunity to help everybody who watches the videos, who sees MTV and the cats with the bling, and they watching Cribs, because television stations and airwaves are not mediated by anybody. If you got some cable and a place to receive a signal, you can see it. And so we wanted to go and say, look, dude, I don't have no gold teeth. I wear my jeans straight up. You know, I don't have any guns. I don't do that. I got kids. I got a wife at home. I go to a 9-to-5, and I rhyme. And for them, when they saw that, they saw the real part of hip-hop. They asked us, they were like, you know, so we get there, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and we hear these applause, and my boy turns to me and he's like, yo, man, that's not us, that has to be for the elections. And I'm like, yeah, it's for the elections. So we start setting up our equipment, and the auditorium starts getting more full, and we're like, yo, man, it's about 300, 400 people out there, and it must be, you know we're doing a concert, but all the applauding and cheering is for the elections. We turn around because, you know, our back is to everybody and plugging in stuff. And we turn around and a big shout goes up. And we see our name up on the side and a tear came down because I'm like, yo, man, this is love. This right here is love. And this is for some hip-hop? At the end, they came up and gave us keffiyehs, which she has on right now. They came up and gave us keffiyehs and they were like, thank you for coming and listening and talking to us and speaking to us about your struggle. And they said to me, they pulled me to the side, and they said, yo, now you know we all aren't terrorists. Can you see now that we all aren't terrorists? And I said, I know, and we ain't all gun-toting thugs. And he was like, I feel you. I feel you. The same things emanated in different countries. We went to, we started off in Manama, Bahrain, which is supposed to be the, you know, safer, it's a safer Muslim country. And there, we hopped off the plane to meet my man, DJ Outlaw, one of the first hip-hop DJs in Manama, Bahrain. And he just talked about the struggle of being in Bahrain. He talked about keeping it real. I never, ever in my life had heard Little John. I mean, I heard, you know, you see the video, but I never, like, got a Little John record until I got to Manama. And I hopped in the car, and they drove us around, and they pumping Little John with the TVs on the headrest, and they like, this is what we're about. It's worldwide, it's universal. In Nazareth, a cat walked up to me and said, yo, so what's up, you gangster? You gangster, you mafia? You gangster? And I was like, nah, dude, I got a job. I got a job. But these stories are just stories without action. If the State Department continues to push this program, if the Institute of Peace continues to push their programs, if we all come together, definitely, my man Silas said it best. We have to start implementing. I look at myself, if you read Freakonomics, they talk about these different things like people being connectors and doing all different types of things. I look at myself as a connector. And they were talking about hip-hop theater in Kenya. If you really want to know, I know the people at the Hip Hop Theater Festival in New York. I'm quite sure they can get with Danny Hawk and them and bring some people over from Kenya and we can start making some moves. But that's what it's about, making some moves. I implore, if you have any resources, please start contributing to any of the causes that are here and the people that are here to definitely get this message out there. Hip hop is not necessarily about... Hip-hop is conflicted in and of itself, so it's definitely not going to save or deliver people from a conflict that has been embedded in their countries for over 200, 400 years. It's not going to get past the political situations that exist when people are using whatever powers that be, manipulating powers that be, or using them for good. It's not going to do that. What hip-hop is the voice of the people. It's always been the voice of the people. That's what it is. people can get it, can get manipulated, but that comes in by one individual. But on mass, it's the voice of the people. That's it. It's always been that simple. Hip-hop isn't some magic mushroom that if you pop it, it's going to change your life forever and you're going to get big clothes and become all famous, but it provides you platforms. It provides you opportunities to be in movies. It provides an opportunity for you to tell your story. They have hip-hop classes. I know cats teaching hip-hop out in Berkeley, at Berkeley University, where they study in the passages of Tupac, you know, of Biggie. They want to know what's going on, rhyme schemes, how you breathe a certain way. All of these things have come out through hip-hop. I got stories. I got mad stories. While we were in Egypt, we got to talk to the cats about East Coast, West Coast beef. They were really asking. In China, where I went last year, because we got an opportunity to go again, we went to China, Mongolia, and Vladivostok, Russia. In China, I went to a store called Thug Life with two T's, thuglife.com. It's a clothing store, and all they sell is Tupac memorabilia. I'm going to go back. I implore you, if we possibly can at all, if you can be part of the Rhythm Rose program, there's two State Department representatives here. I say mob them, holler at them, talk to them, and find out what's going on with the program. They want to institute some more programming based around hip-hop and hip-hop structure. You can also do art programs with graffiti artists. I'll give you that one for free. You can come talk to me. Okay. Good. That's right. Okay. So now, no. Let's make it work. Thank you.
Thank you guys for very fascinating and definitely inspiring presentations. Give everybody one more hand. It's been really refreshing to hear youthful voices in the Institute for me, maybe for some of you as well. So we'd like to open up to questions now. If you have questions or comments, please come to the microphone and we'll call on you. If you just want to line up behind the microphone, that's probably the easiest.
I just have a question for Mr. Summers. Yeah. Clearly you've done a lot of work in Africa with hip-hop over there. But my question is, have you ever done any, I guess, cross-examination with rock music in Vietnam and how they used to use rock music as in their earphones when they were using automatic machine guns to shoot down people in Vietnam? I was wondering if you've ever done any research on that or if you've ever traveled to other regions to see how maybe other types of music or hip-hop music has been used in other cultures for negative reasons.
Really started in Gambia, outside of a refugee camp with Sierra Leoneans, and it was there talking about Tupac, which you know started me on this. So since that time, most of the places I go, I end up talking about Tupac and hip hop music in the local scene. It's mostly in Africa, but in Kosovo. East Timor, it's interesting. East Timor was so secluded and cut off from the world during the Indonesian occupation for 24 years. That's the only place I've been, conflict-affected place I've been, probably the only place I've been where there isn't a lot of hip-hop influence on youth. And that's because it was really shut off. So lots of youth are very into country music and of course, and reggae. But besides that, I do interviews with people and have conversations with people about hip-hop all the time. And, I mean, I think all of my colleagues on the panel are so correct in talking about the honesty and truth that comes from hip-hop, and it evokes, it's an art form that allows people to bring reality from their perspective onto a bigger stage that otherwise I don't know if people would even know they're there. And so with regards to the Vietnam, I know about that, but I haven't learned enough about it with regards to the rock and roll and its influence on soldiers in Vietnam. But thank you for that.
Good afternoon. My name is David Mwambari. I'm a Rwandese student in Nairobi, Kenya. So I live and breed around conflict in northern Uganda, Congo, Rwanda, Burundi. So I'm just here visiting. But I wanted to ask a question. Something I've seen, like after being involved in the genocide in Rwanda and working a lot in Uganda and Congo, is that with hip-hop, yes, there's a lot of struggle and pain expression, and reggae does that too. How do you put hope, peace, a desire for the future? You know, as a young person, how do you put the lyrics that attract you to life, even though you're in that pain and struggle? Because if you keep on informing the psychology that it's bad, it's going to be bad, it's going to be worse. Why is it important to voice that? Is there a second step now of taking the psychology to inform the peace and the hope that is possible in that society? And I'm a researcher from Africa, so that should not also be destroyed. Possibly. Thank you.
Most definitely, I mean, personally, what I've learned working with the young brothers in Gulu is that ever since I took the message of hip-hop, the truth, you know, representing the people and telling their stories, they've actually been empowered. You know, I went to, I'll give you the story about them briefly. When we put a call out for them to show up, they all brought their demos and they were in English and accents that you would not even understand. And so my time spent with them, I made them realize, because my return to Uganda, I also introduced what they call the Luga Flow, which is rapping in Luganda, which is getting people to start embracing rapping in their native tongues. And so sharing that story with the brothers in Gulu, and with all, you know, I mean, right now there's so many stories you can hear from all the young people in Gulu. And my forum, what it gave them is the platform to sit on a table and share these stories. And then while they were writing, they could have wrote it in English, which means half of the population would not have understood what they were saying. You know, but when I went ahead to tell them to, you know, do it in Acholi, you know, be the first people to take a message so that even the little kids that are running around the camps could be able to recite your songs. You know, and when they did that, even during the during filming the music video, the mothers from the camps came out. And they're like, who are these guys? Where are they from? And they're like, wow, you guys are singing such positive things. How come we've never heard your music? Like they were doing it before. But this was their first time to do it. So that brought new hope in Gulu. And I've been back to Gulu about 5 times now. You know, and every time I go back, the movement is stronger. More and more kids are coming out to attend the forums, which shows you that, you know, hip-hop is bringing hope in Gulu. And the only way it's bringing hope because these guys own it. They're not waiting for me to bring it. I sparked it up. Now they feel they own it. So every time I go back, they got something new to show me. So definitely hip-hop is a platform that, you know, is giving young people that, you know, that ownership of changing their communities. And the hope, and it's only through hope they could do it. But the only way to affirm it too is people like me who have ventured out to show them that you could do it, is to stay, you know, truthful to be a man of my word, to take back the things that we share in within the conferences, that yes, they could happen. And which makes me work harder on this side, because I must live up to that word. And I believe in myself too, so it keeps happening.
First, what's your favorite Tupac song?
What's my favorite Tupac song? Mm-hmm. Hail Mary.
Really? Okay. I really like Changes, personally. And that relates to my second question. I think hip-hop is very effective as a method of empowerment and expression and just, you know, telling your story to people who don't know what's going on. But how do we make people that, like, make these decisions to put up the wall care?
Wow. I'm just a hip-hop artist.
I know.
It is a challenge. The more we're challenged, the more we think, you know, the more we come up with new ways to work. I don't know what is the right way and the right thing to do, but I do believe that if I look back in history, I'm blessed to be alive today and be here and do what I'm doing because people back then worked very hard and they didn't have half of what I'm having today.
Yeah.
So just looking back at history, saying thank you to everybody who's worked hard for me, I keep on working. I have no idea if I'm going to get anything out of it at all. But you just keep on doing it and hoping, you know, it's going to get better. To me, to see today that after 10 years of the hip-hop in Palestine started, today there are over 100 crews there singing about Palestine as just, you know, as a word to describe India, as a word to describe Mexico, as a word to, it's just a struggle, you know? We're just using this word, but they're getting to understand they're part of a universal struggle. It's not just the Palestinians who are suffering.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, do you think the revolution will be televised?
It is, it is already. It is, for me, it's a great, great, great step to have a documentary made about Palestinian hip-hop.
I think it should be televised.
Right, because what people see...
Everyone can see it.
What people see today in TV, and I've seen Hollywood movies, and everything that you see about Arabs and Muslims is, oh my God, they're hijacking a fucking airplane. So to be able to have today a documentary that actually show you there is art, there are poets, there are people who are actually writing and talking and interested in communication, that's a huge accomplishment to me.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fossil, I wanted to just comment on what she said just now, her question. How do you actually get the people who are building the walls to listen? I think that hip-hop, with the saturation it has globally and not just the actual numbers, and also in the just the global percentage of saturation of the youth, I think that hip-hop, if you're speaking one language of trying to unite everybody, it's the best way to do it. I mean, if you get the numbers, you do what it does. And what hip-hop does best is spread awareness. And so I think that How do you make the people who have the, you know, building the walls listen? You completely saturate your message. You get your message out globally, and you get it on the large numbers, and you get the youth, and you get everybody else actually saying the same thing. And when everybody's speaking the same thing, you have to listen. But my question is also directed at Abir. You said something to me that was really, well, you said something during your, that really struck me. You said to you, Tupac is God. Like, well... And that's one of those things where looking at hip hop on an international level, you look at you always hear Tupac, you always hear Biggie, and it's one of those things where, like, most of my experience of hip hop is dealing with hip hop in black communities in the United States, and the effect that Biggie and Tupac have had in those communities, I would be really, really have to stretch really hard to say it was anything positive. You know what I'm saying? I think hip-hop can be very, very positive, and I think that the fact that we have Biggie and Tupac as our mascots is more so a reflection of, like, the bodies that are actually funding hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? And my question to you is, since you've been in America, are there any artists who you would think would be better representations? Because actually with Tupac and Biggie, you get situations where it actually unite, but you also get situations like in Haiti or Rwanda when violent outbreaks, when violent stuff happens, and they're actually looking at, like, you made reference to said Tupac, these guys are real killers. They didn't kill anybody. Like, these people, like, their message gets so, like, they're talking about stuff, and people in other places, they really only get the media of it, and they don't realize that they're the ones who are actually killing people, and they're listening to message of violence, but not realizing that, like, are there any other people, like, do you think it would be more impactful if we had better positive mascots for hip-hop, you know? Like,
for the first part of the question, when I say God has bad things and God has good things. Who is responsible for tsunami and hurricanes and poverty and hunger? And it's the same God we all thank for mountains and seas and oceans, you know? You can't expect God to be perfect. That's what religion wants us to know, but it's not true. And I consider Tupac as a God, not because he was maybe a good person or a bad person. He's a human being. I'm not expecting him to be nothing. To me, he's God because I got, you know, my eyes opened for many things. As for the second half, Public Enemy, Dead Prez, Mary J. Blige, Lauryn Hill, all the Marleys, and all the underground MCs I work with today. These are the people that really represent hip hop to me in a better way than Tupac did.
I'm
going to
take the liberty of asking a quick question before you guys, just kind of following on to that. Why, you noted the difference between the underground hip hop scene and like the commercial hip hop scene. Why do you think that the kind of hip hop that is popular in the US and that it does have misogynistic, blatant misogynistic lyrics, it promotes violence and so on, why do you think it is more popular than the kind of hip-hop that you guys are doing?
To quote KRS, sex and violence sell. Period. You know, violent movies sell. Violent, anything, you know, it's car crashes, there's whole channels built on let's watch the best, stupidest criminals. Let's watch the most horrific car crashes. You know, let's watch Faces of Death. Yay! And sell a million of those. You know, people are fascinated with the taboos of each society. Mm-hmm. That's what people get fascinated. If you're told not to watch something, that's the first thing you go watch. So if there's, you know, I mean, that's one cycle I hate, is to say, well, we need to make these companies do blah, 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 so they don't do blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's not, every choice that we have as human beings is an individual choice. You don't have to buy anything that you don't like. You know, en masse, people buy what they are promoted to consume, you know, as consumers. So I think the good thing about Tupac that I liked about Tupac was that Tupac was a conflicted individual, that you saw all these facets of how somebody could come out of their mouth with some of the most prolific things and then some of the most horrible things at the very same time, which was a great reflection of what humanity in and of itself is. So, and you can see that throughout time with any great individual. You know, you have one person, he's a wonderful painter, but a child molester. Does it make the art less beautiful? You know, I mean, seriously. Jackson Pollock's paintings go for millions and millions of dollars, but I heard he was an asshole. You know, does that make you hate Jackson Pollock? Does that make you say, I will not go to that gallery if they sell a Jackson Pollock because he was an asshole and a drunk? You don't. You say it's art by a conflicted artist, and I can see the beauty in it, but the conflict of that person also reflects the beauty of that human individual. And for my man in the back, I think that choice of people promoting positive things is what happens to hip-hop artists as they grow and learn more about what they're actually doing. I saw the change in France when I was first starting to venture over to Paris and go to Marseille and go to Nancy and all these places. You know, they were like, thug life, I'm killing motherfuckers, I'm on a train, we robbing, we shooting. Nobody had no guns, nobody been in no prison, you know. I mean, but they were reflecting what was going on in the street. But as they got older and they started to see, you know, I got family, I got kids. Then they started talking about, you know what, we need to slow down, we need to stop this violence. Because they grow into themselves as human beings. To be able to release all this strain, this pain and strife at the very onset, when you first discover that you can get these things out on paper. I think it happens to poets too. You know, when they first start writing poetry, they talk about all the bad problems that are the issues that they're trying to deal with. And as they continue workshopping and working on their craft, then they start to talk about the beauty of life because they even realize themselves how dark their material is.
Victoria, to your point, I think, yeah. And this is very important, what you brought up as well. I think there's hip-hop, when it first started, like you mentioned, in the Bronx, right, it was about one subject matter. It was about the struggle, the hardship of life, right? But today, look at hip-hop. It's like this, right? And I think the message that you all bring from around the world is very different from the hip-hop that we have here in the U.S. today, right? We have Lil Wayne doing Lollipop, you know? And this is how adults and researchers and PhDs and academia and politicians look at hip-hop, you know? And they don't understand it. I mean, you all are blessed, some of us here are blessed to hear hip-hop and feel it in our hearts and know how to move, and it touches us, whether it's from Palestine, I don't know your language, whether it's from Uganda, I don't know your languages, but I feel it, right? I'm from former Yugoslavia, we had our fair share of struggles, you know, civil war, so we have our hip-hop artists, and they touch me as well. The problem is this, how do we get your message to the right people? I mean, I have a PhD, Silas, please don't knock research. we good people, I promise. But it's difficult, and Dr. Summers can attest to that, to how do you get the message when people on top look at you like, whoa, these are street people, we don't understand it. How do we relate? You know, there's a huge gap. So our task as PhDs, as researchers, is to build or bridge the divide, you know? So the question is, how do we do that? How do we relay the message that hip-hop is not a negative force? It can be an empowering, educational, and peace-building tool for our youth. So.
Okay, I'll say something about that, how to do that. I mean, we're all humans at the end of the day, and we're passionate. I mean, so you got a PhD, you're a researcher, you got a love for hip-hop, right? And we're innovators at the same time. You see, the world you walk in is not the world I do, but we meet at the table and talk, and we share. And so out of that creativity, we find means of being able to bridge gaps. So what I think that needs to do is develop a dialogue of you and your interests of how do I get this politician to sign, to put a signature on this paper to just go support a hip-hop movement. And through that dialogue, I'm sure you'll meet a lot of, maybe, I mean, I can't say a lot, but some interested professors, interested politicians that think it's cool. And it's just like the hip-hop struggle itself. I mean, radio stations were not playing hip-hop. And we had to maneuver ourselves. And as the generations, you know, started changing, you know, you have people in your same age range calling the shots. So, and I believe we're going through that era where, you know, young people are moving into positions, you know, to be able to, you know, activate some resources. But as now, we have to start now. I mean, you sit back and connect with people that have the same minds as you and find out how definitely could we put our language together to appeal to the politicians or people who actually apply these policies so we can make this change.
Well, I just want to thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you for all the work that you're doing, because I think that especially the documentaries send a clear message, you know, because a lot of people, honestly, are just not aware. They're not aware of exactly what's going on in your countries, and they're not aware of how powerful hip-hop is and what it can do for your youth in your countries. So keep up the great work. I'll do my part, that's for sure. So thank you all.
I think the best thing you can do in all of your research, in all of your community building, is to, I mean, for me personally, the best way to get a message out to people is to start trying to flood the market with as much viral. The internet is available, and you can take this forum that we've had here and put it on YouTube and give it a nice little funny tag, and the next thing you know, 500 people watched it. But 500 people have been educated. I think the other thing, too, is big business wants to make money. So in order to make this profitable, you have to show them that they can make some sort of profit off of this, whether it's profit of easing their conscience or the profit of actual dollars going into their pocket. I think that can happen. That's serious. You know, you have philanthropic people and places out here, and they want to give money to a cause, and they don't necessarily really want to talk to you about that. They want to know about it in a nice little prospectus in two paragraphs less, and then they want to know where they can send their check so they can write that off at the end of the year. And I think if you make a you can take the U.S. Institute of Peace, and we can say, well, we have the Hip Hop Foundation, you know, you can do it in your little thing that you check off every year for your federal contributions. Check 4C, box 4C for Hip Hop Peace Building Initiative. You know, that's how you do it. You know, that's how you have to work within the system to continue to make strides in the system. You work without the system to keep your own individuality, but you got to work within the systems that are in place so that you can achieve your own platform.
I thought that one of the, there was something in the Slingshot Hip Hop movie at the very beginning that really resonated to the experiences I've had. And talking to young people, particularly in Africa, there were some hip-hop artists were leaving an apartment, and one of them turns to the camera and says, now people are going to finally know who we are. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the reason why that it's such an important art form, and I think why it's so hard for many people in the establishment or in, you know, it, to break through because it's so piercingly honest. And that's the point. And it's hard for a lot of people to hear. And I think that, you know, Carl, what you're saying is really important. I mean, actually, all of you are saying, which is, you know, at some point, I think there's going to be a breakthrough, and I think it's happening. But one of the things that makes people uncomfortable with Tupac or others is that it's so piercingly honest. And it is bringing out realities from the perspective of young people going through extreme hardship in poetic ways, but it's also in very powerful ways. And it's a new art form. I'm hoping that, I mean, I think it's starting to draw a lot of power in a lot of different places. It's a really exciting art form, and one of the most extraordinary things is how it really is so global.
Okay, first I just want to say thank you to all of you for being here. For USIP to have something like this is avant-garde, to say the least. And so I thank you for bringing these artists here to talk to us and to hopefully start a dialogue about what hip-hop can do and what it's not all the time, which is, you know, we see here in the U.S. A lot of bling-bling and the violence and the misogyny and all of that. And which brings me to my question. Even though we do have that aspect in our hip-hop here and it's mainstream, do you find or are you in contact with underground hip-hop artists here or people who do more conscious messages like the Talib Kweli's and the Commons and the Dead Prez and the Mos Defs? Do they know about what you're doing, and do you get any kind of feedback or responses from them?
Well, the only way to actually be here in the States was with the help of underground MCs who are supporting our cause and their own. If you want names, I work with a Jewish MC called Invincible, and she's an underground artist, amazing, and she actually rejected Talib Kweli. He asked her to work with him, and she worked with him, but she doesn't want to, she doesn't want to be part of, she want to be her own person, her own artist.
Right.
And I work with a lot of Palestinian underground MCs here in America who were born here and always been living here, mm-hmm. and I'm always fascinated by, you know, how hip-hop is huge, but not on TV.
Right.
This is when you get to know that, whoa, it's a huge world. It's actually a resistance tool. It's an educational tool because you meet these underground MCs that are doing much like benefit shows for free for the people and in block parties. These are the real MCs to me.
Thank you.
And I'll just add on that a bit. I mean, and this movement has been going on, like, not, you know, and within Africa and within North America and within Palestine. Like, I mean, you could date it back, let me say 10 years ago. You know, young people have been longing to do this. And now that we have the gap to, you know, come out of North America and be able to expose the truth, I mean, you always are amazed by how much you get embraced by the underground, you know, hip-hopers. You know, because the minute you say that I'm from, you know, Uganda, and, you know, this is what I'm all about, brothers that are out here pushing a real cause, they always extend their love. You know, we got a project called Global Connects, you know, whereby it's a project that embraces brothers from Haiti, you know, brothers from Uganda, you know, probably work with her still, you know, but a theory that's connecting all MCs all over the world to just represent the truth we are all speaking about.
That's great. I'm from Haiti too, so I understand.
Can I say something just about this? Misogyny has come up two or three times. Mm-hmm. And in interviews with people about that, rappers, and I also heard an interview on the radio with Palestinian rappers, in talking to artists in Africa, they're not that interested in misogyny. And they hear it in some of the music that comes out of Africa. But in listening to the music, it's not that present. Nor is in a lot of African rap music that, I mean, in East Africa and in West Africa that I've listened to, it's not that angry. I mean, it has a lot to do with describing the situation, corruption, injustice. This is what my life's about. This is why, you know, I'm being treated badly. And, you know, hear me. And there's a lot about that. So there's a lot of filtering and thinking about, more than anybody, Tupac, but a lot of the artists And I think that people really do edit out a lot of the things that don't resonate for their life. And one of them, in terms of global hip-hop, at least in my experience, is misogyny. It is not one of the things that seems to have the broad influence out of American hip-hop in other places, at least in Africa. So,
I think it's amazing how you guys are talking about, you know, the struggles of, you know, trying to get people to understand the conscious level. I mean, for me, I see that there is conscious artists out there, you know. I've only been listening to them for the last couple of years, but I mean, it's the Talib Kweli's and the Mos Def. But it's not like that's the only thing they're rhyming about. Those guys have swagger, right? That's the difference, I think, for me, is when I see a lot of these guys who are rhyming about, cause, like Lil Wayne. I mean, little kids look up to him because he's a cool-looking dude, man. It's not like he's just, you know, some goofy-looking good-looking guy with his grill and whatever. He's got a lot of appeal, right? So, I mean, for me, I think it's amazing that to have somebody like, for example, my girl from Palestine or Babaluku, you know, they resonate with the kids because they're cool. The kids want to be like them. That's the biggest thing about hip-hop, is if you can make it conscious and cool at the same time, how much more valuable is that, you know? So once again, sorry, Mr. Summers, I have a question for you again. My bad, man. I'm not picking on you.
That's right. Go for it.
last week, 2 weeks ago, I was in New York, and I got the chance to meet Ishmael Bey. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah.
So Ishmael wrote, you know, best-selling novel, A Long Way Gone, Sierra Leonean refugee, for anybody who's not familiar with his work.
Ex-child soldier,
that's right. Yeah. So he talks about in his book, you know, them feeding him with a brown bound, cocaine mixed with gunpowder, you know, all these tactics that they would get him kind of psyched up, watching Rambo movies, all that's those right. sorts of things, right? Now, my girl Stacy actually let me know, I didn't know this, but Ishmael apparently is a big rapper, you know, and that's a lot of what he does. So my question to you is have you ever, in your, you know, travels through West Africa or wherever else, have you ever been able to diagnose both of those things at the same time to see, like, somebody like Ishmael to take that platform now on a conscious hip-hop level? Do you think that it's possible for the Tupac kind of... To see it in both ways. Like, for me, when I listen to hip-hop, it's like a tragic comedy to me. You know, when I listen to American hip-hop, a lot of these guys, what they're saying is true. And I look at why. Why are they sitting on 24-inch rims? Why? You know? Because that's the only thing that allows, that materialism is the only thing that allows them to escape that culture. Mm-hmm. So I put it out to you if there is any way that through your work you've been able to diagnose it in a way that you can explain to these young kids why the music is like that, right? And show the transition of how hip-hop has become that way in the States.
Well, I have found a lot of youth, we'll talk about Sierra Leonean youth, to be extremely sophisticated in general about African-American, American hip-hop music and rappers such as Tupac and others. And then to do this kind of thinking about it, well, he gets angry in this way, and so forth. And I think before the war, there was an identification with hip hop, with Tupac. I think largely because of his honesty. He, you know, he sings about being afraid, for example, about dying soon, and all these things. And there was great appeal. And I think it's sort of like what Carl was saying with it, that they were talking about being killers and so forth, but they weren't doing it. What happened during the war? Well, it was something. The appeal was something that was very available to commanders in the field to exploit child soldiers whom they'd abducted. So they did, and they did use brown, which brown is a mixture of cocaine and gunpowder, by the way. And you cut kids at the temple, and then put it in. They call it a plaster, and then you put it. You cut here. You put the plaster in, I mean the brown in, and then you put a plaster, which is basically mud, and put it on top, and the high shoots to your brain. And then at that point, some of the kids, I mean one ex-child soldier broke down crying talking about that experience. He says then they would play Tupac, and you know, you'd dance with the machine guns, and then they'd send you off to kill, and he said it was like killing chickens. I mean, these kids didn't know what they were doing. Mm. This is, I mean, profound exploitation. Yeah. So the point, I think, is that when they're not being exploited, there's real sophisticated thinking and editing about it, about this music and where it comes from and how it influences them. And the last point is that a lot of Tupac's music is also used for adjustment to the post-war situation. And some of the songs that were mentioned, Changes and Hail Mary and Keep Your Head Up. So he's a conflicted person, as Carl said. And there's something, I think justifiably fascinating about him because he's such a great artist. And youth really take that in and think about it in very sophisticated ways. So I wouldn't be as concerned as you seem to be. It's not, it's incredible how much people really think about this and think it through and then pull out the misogyny. And, you know, we like that he talks about being a gangster, but we like the way he dresses. We're not going to be like that, but we like the way, you know, how fearless he is, things like that. So.
Thank you. I also just want to reiterate what others have said and say thank you and shukran and waibale to our guests for coming today. I also want to piggyback and ask another question about Sierra Leone because I think it's such a fascinating case study. It has the most vibrant music culture I think I've ever seen, and particularly the hip-hop youth culture. And not just because it's had an impact in a sort of abstract way, even thinking of just empowerment, but it actually defined the outcome of the political elections this last year. I think it would be hard-pressed to find a Sierra Leonean who would say that the new president, Ernest Bai Koroma, didn't win because the young people were empowered by these musicians who were singing songs, sort of trying to engage in the political process. And a great example is there's a musician, Emerson, who I'm sure you know, and he had a song that came out just after the election. And the lyrics in Creole say, "If you not shake, we de wapo," which translates roughly to, if you do not fulfill your obligations to the youth of this country who worked so hard to elect you, there's no way you'll be able to maintain your support and you'll be kicked out of power. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that as an example of a really positive effect that hip hop has had as a way to engage and empower youth in a tangible way. And sort of talking about how do you affect the people who are building these walls? How is Sierra Leone maybe an example for how you can do that?
Okay. Feel a little abashed talking so much with three artists beside me, but it's actually, there's another example. There's a movie called Democracy in Dakar, and okay, well then you're going to get an example of someplace of Senegal and a hip hop artists who were part of the reason why there was a change in the election, the reason why the new president was elected, who has since turned his back on youth, and it's, so it's, that's part of the story in the movie as well. But it's hard to find a Sierra Leonean who can't talk about the problem. The main problem in the country is corruption. And Emerson, among others, has been singing about it for a while. And actually, you're right, it's an extremely vibrant community of artists there. And so I think actually that even before the election started happening, that all this music among youth who are these urban youth in Freetown really intimidate the leaders, and I think that things were really moving in that direction even before the election, but certainly their influence is very exciting, and I think it's inspiring and new for youth in Sierra Leone to have this kind of impact. So, you know, Emerson is a new kind of politician as well as an artist. It's very exciting. He's quite an interesting person, very talented.
Okay, we'll take thank you. A final question, and then wrap up.
First of all, I have to say thank you to USIP for putting this on. I've come to about five things so far, and I have to say this is probably the most real thing that I've been to.
Thank
so
you.
Mad props for that, right? My question is all the panelists, but most directed at Carl, probably because you seem to have gotten a pretty diverse view of hip-hop movements globally. Hip-hop's been relatively old in the United States now. It's been around as long as I've been alive. And a lot of folks, yourself maybe included, feel that it's kind of come to a sort of stagnation. And, you know, the Lil Wayne, well, I'm sorry, popular, or mainstream hip-hop has kind of come to its little, or is in a bit of a rut, I think, Kanye West notwithstanding. But what do you think that you know, United States hip-hop has to learn from a lot of the global offspring that I think in many cases are a little more vibrant, a little more true to their roots because they're right at their roots. I mean, like, from what you've seen, how would you compare that to U.S.?
I mean, personally, any new country is more vibrant and excited about change than a country that's been around for many moons, because they get jaded. Each person gets jaded by business or by however the country is operating, and they've seen it all before, and they've seen it so many times that they become desensitized to any change that's happening. And I look at hip-hop as that sort of country, United States hip-hop. We've gotten hip-hop and embraced it, and we've seen it in a number of forms and forced collaborations and hip-hop jazz, hip-hop rock, you know, hip-hop house, hip-hop country. You know, I mean, it's as many labels, being a Western society, as many labels and possible ways that we can sell you Coke, you know, Coke Light, you know, one, you know, Happy Coke, Sad Coke. It's the same way you get your hip-hop. You know, in other countries, what you see an embrace of the actual core understanding of what hip-hop was, which was, I have nothing, I need to make something, and this is how I'm going to do it. You know, at the time that hip-hop was formed, the music programs were cut, so you had a guy who used to watch Jamaican toasters in his home country go out to the park and emulate the Jamaican toaster. You know, the DJ start cutting, he needs somebody to toast, he needs an MC for the party, they start doing that. That becomes a popular movement. We've made that out of nothing. And so when you relate that story to another country where they have a conflict or whatever, they just start, you know, they haven't been exposed to this musical form. And you say, here, here's something new. They say, oh, snives, oh, wow. So I can really say this. And that you start seeing the expression and the creativity and the understanding and the love and the passion for that thing that at its base is, you know, is something really simple. And so you see that embrace for hip-hop, and you see how people take it into their heart, and it becomes great for them, and they birth this new idea. Give it time, though. I mean, that's the same thing I say about, you know, U.S. hip-hop. In France right now, the complaint I get from them is, they're not really real hip-hop artists. You know, Solar, he mainstream, and such and such. You know, Solar 6 years ago was the man. That Solar, he like, yeah, Solar whack, you know, he got real comfortable, he live in his mansion, he got his bling. You know, you see Busta Flex or who's ever cat? The cat, some of the cats from Akhenaten from I can't remember the crew. But you see them start to make these changes into mainstream hip hop, like the US has gone into mainstream hip hop. Just like the US starts to follow the models of older countries. You know, with the gentrification and things of that nature. If you go to France, the poor live outside the city, the rich live in the city. You start seeing that with the United States. The rich live in the city, poor live in the suburbs. It's, you know, we're following this trend. That's why I love history. So I think that's what you're seeing. I think the new life that will happen with hip-hop is when people get sick and tired of the old thing that's been going on. As simple as that. I mean, it's nothing. You're tired, I'm tired of stuff that I consider not really of value. But because if you grew up in hip-hop and you have a love for it, you don't change. You don't say, I don't like hip-hop anymore. You just say, I don't like that. You know, but when you hear something good and something new and something fresh, then you embrace it, which means that they get an opportunity to be on your airwaves. I would rather listen to her rhymes on her beat and may not understand the thing she's saying, but I can hear passion and love. And the same thing with Silas. I can hear the energy and the creativity with it, and that'll make me listen to it more so than if I heard some incessant droning that goes on the radio every day. That's become white noise.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you all for coming. This has been a really interesting panel discussion for me as well, being the moderator. And I just would like to recognize one person, Stacey Williard, if you'd like to stand. Stacey is responsible for the entire week-long Hip Hop and Peace Building Festival. She's behind all of it, and she's done an excellent job, and I hope you guys will come out to some other events, and I'll give her a chance
to say something. And that's kind of what I just, the whole intention behind all this. Like, first of all, I want to thank the United States Institute of Peace for hosting us, because I kind of came to them as the bottom of the barrel research assistant here, and my position here now, and pitched it, and for them to embrace it and have Victoria take hold of it and make this happen was incredible. So thank you for the conflict resolution community, because the intention was to bring two communities together. The community I am proud to be a part of, the conflict resolution community, and the hip hop community, which I have a love affair with right now because of the passion and the love and the potential that exists for the two of us to use one another and to take this forward. I want to preview tonight. Tonight is our DC Hip Hop Summit. We have invited the community, community workers, community leaders, educators, and we are looking at DC Hip Hop tonight. And we are looking at what is working in DC Hip Hop and how we can do more of that together to transform local communities and reach out to the DC youth. The event starts soon. It's going to be at 6 tonight. We have kind of a neat performance lineup intertwined or intermingled with roundtable discussions. It's not going to be a panel. It's going to be us discussing together what this all means to us and where we want to take it. It's at the Atlas Theater, which is on 8th Street, Northeast. We're going to have a freestyle cypher. And what I've come to learn is that the gem of DC hip hop is freestyle. So we have quite a few local DC artists who are going to be there to show you their freestyle skills. So come on by. Tomorrow we're doing a big global hip hop, global citizenship event. We have 6 international artists. We have 6 DC artists. A killer house band, and we are going to jam out. So check out the website. It's www.beats4peace.org. And thanks again for coming.